Hey listener, when you do wine and food pairing, in what order do you do it? Do you choose the wine first and then choose what you're going to eat? Or do you choose the food first and then decide what wine you'll have with it? Today, we're going to start with the wine. And we have a professional chef whose expertise is in food and wine matching put together a meal based on a range of wines. This is the Inside Wine Podcast. I'm Joe Janisch, a certified specialist of wine and wine industry professional since 1996, giving you insider tips to make the right wine decisions. Today, our guest is Chef David Blessing. David is the Vice President of Culinary Arts and Development for Longwood Venues and Destinations in Boston, which is a private events company that hosts and caters unique luxury events at some of the most beautiful venues around New England. And they handle experiences that range from boutique weddings on the beach to wine and food festivals, such as the annual Nantucket Wine Festival, Newport Wine and Food Festival. They do charity events. David's been a chef pairing food and wine for 30 years now, and he, to me, seemed like one of the perfect people to talk to about today's subject, which is how to build a meal around wine. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, you're welcome. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you. So you've had a lot of experience in food and wine. You started out as executive chef at Stonehenge Inn. You had 13 years at the Four Seasons Hotel and Resorts, worked for Whole Foods Market as a regional supervisor, preparing the foods program for the North Atlantic region. With all of this experience, I would say that you have a really good background on working with wine and food. And I know that we talked a little bit before how you did a lot of winemaker dinners. Maybe you could start walking us through how you got into this, and then we can kind of take it from there.
Sure. You know, I think of very early on in my career, my first job as a sous chef a couple of years out of culinary school was at a new American restaurant in Boston. And two brothers were the co-chefs. They had lived and worked in California, in Napa, or some part of wine region, and very into wines. And the owner was very into wines. And I'm always just so, I guess, pleased that I started out that way. You know, at that time in Boston, they were the only restaurant to pair wines by the glass with every dish. And it was really the owner and the chefs that wanted to do that. And you know, I was also able to purchase wines at cost to learn about wine. So really my first job was an introduction to wine and food pairing and appreciation for really good wine. So it was a great place to start.
Yeah, you know, you just brought up like it wasn't really a thing. Like today, people aren't going into restaurants. We're recording this during the pandemic, unfortunately, but this whole idea of having a wine list and pairing wines with your food and doing flights and wines by the glass, 30 years ago, that really wasn't a thing. Like I remember going out to a restaurant, and if the restaurant served wine, it was house red and house white. So that must have been kind of like a pioneering thing to be doing back then.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was called a new American restaurant, and it was very regional, food driven, and a lot of West Coast influence. And obviously a lot of West Coast wines, but even the wines themselves weren't your everyday wines. There were a lot of boutique wines, even way back then when Cake Bread and Frog Sleep, you know, smaller wineries, organic ones that were maybe at that point not really well known that are now household names. Storybooks Inn. I think back and I'm kind of having some great memories because it was such a unique time. I didn't know that I wanted to learn so much about wine and food pairing, but it just kind of came naturally. You know, it took me a few years to appreciate that. Really, that was when I was a chef of the Stonehenge Inn, where we did a wine dinner every month for 2 years. So thank God I had that experience, and it served me well in that role as executive chef.
Yeah, it's funny how we all fall into the wine business one way or another. It's not something people generally go to school for, and then something happens and we fall in love with it. So you were doing a wine dinner a month. Was that with winemakers?
Yeah.
Really? Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, I was 26 years old, I think. And not every one of those 24 winemakers had the winemaker, but I'd say at least half of them. And just as you know, I'm sure, very big personalities, very eccentric, talented, creative, wild. You know, I mean, it was awesome to actually pair wines next to the winemaker and have that immediate feedback was just incredible. So that really obviously solidified my skill, but it created even more of a love and of wine and it as a hobby, I guess more than a hobby. You know, my wife and I honeymooned in Napa and went to multiple wineries, stayed there. We went on many trips before that. And then years later, I moved to San Francisco and we probably made another 30 trips up there. So the more I talk about it, I realize how much wine has been a part of my career and even my personal life.
Wow. As I mentioned in the opening, you know, some of the things that you get involved in pretty intensely is the Nantucket Wine Festival, Newport Wine and Food Festival. There's a lot of wine there and you bring a lot of the food to the table. So, you know, again, that this was why I really wanted to bring you in and talk to you about how to like build a meal around wine, because the whole thing about wine for me is matching the perfect wine with the perfect food. Like I know it's not what everybody does, but for me, that's like what makes wine really fun is finding that perfect match. And usually I am already deciding what my meal is going to be and then thinking, what wine is going to go with this? But what we're going to do today is the opposite. Listener, I actually sent a bunch of wines from St. Francis Winery to David and asked him to build a menu around them because I am just fascinated with how a chef works it from that side of it, because I don't think too many people think about grabbing a bottle of wine and then deciding how they're going to build their meal around it. But maybe that makes sense if you have some special wines in the cellar. And again, like this is something that you've done for 30 years, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's kind of my thing, if you will. And I say it's my thing because I certainly enjoy it as a hobby, but you know, it stimulates my brain to create dishes around the wine. I love both wine and food. And to find those little nuances and subtleties in the wine and then to be able to bring those out through food it's high level. I mean, after doing this for so many years, you know, you want to challenge yourself. So that's kind of what it has become for me. And I think the end result is always appreciated. So when I say that, you know, I feel like at the wine festivals, you know, if you have, you might be serving 800 people at a table and you're paired one wine, I feel it's really important to get that wine, to taste it, to create that dish and really compliment that wine and honor it, so to speak. I mean, the person, whether it's a winemaker or a rep or whoever, is coming at a table next to you, you know, I think it's embarrassing to not create a dish to compliment that wine. And so I think my experience is that people have been really appreciative that I put that effort in. And I'm not saying that other chefs don't, but I know all chefs don't. Oftentimes they want to just create the dish they want and forget about the wine. And, you know, we have to remember this is a food and wine festival. So that's kind of my approach. And through that effort and really wanting to do a good job, I've been asked to do multiple private wine dinners and lunches and things like that, where instead of pairing a dish with one course, you know, one item, doing five or six. And that's where the complexities with the pairings get so complex and awesome and fun and challenging.
So before we get into how we went through this process with the wines that I sent you, I'm just curious, like, would you normally get the wines ahead of time to taste? And I'm assuming that's preferred, but is that usually how it works? Is that like step one?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. For years, it was, I guess I was just too young and didn't want to ask, thinking I was being a pain in the ass, I guess. And I would read the tasting notes and I would, you know, might reach out to a sommelier I knew. But I always felt like, oh, if I just tried that wine, you know, I tasted it on site that day. I'm like, if I could have tasted that, I would have changed this dish and made it better. So I started probably the last 5-6 years asking for the wines. And generally, they're very pleased that I'm asking and they appreciate it and they send me the wines. In fact, you know, some of the wineries have sent me enough where I can cook with it. So I do, oftentimes I'll braise something usually on a menu, and I like to use the wine in that braise for obvious reasons. Or I might make a reduction of the wine into a gastrique to really complement that dish. So, you know, I just ask, and most of the time I'm able to get the wine in advance to taste it and create the dish or to cook with it or both.
Yeah, I've been on the other side of it as a PR person for the last 20 or so years and done a lot of winemaker dinners. And from the very beginning, I've always like tried to send the wines to the chefs ahead of time because for the exact same reason. And I have run into a couple times where the chef like was like, no, you don't need to send it to me. And I'm like, no, I think you really do need to like taste the wines before you build some kind of a dish around this. And it's funny to me that some of them just don't even want the wines, which always baffles me. But that's more rare than the usual.
Yeah, I do think it's more rare. I mean, I'm not bashing out the chefs. I'm just saying that I felt, why wouldn't I want to ask for the wines and to taste them and create the best pairing that I possibly can, you know?
Okay. So step one, you get a chance to open the bottles and taste the wines. Do you take notes as you're tasting the wines, or how does that work?
I do, yeah. Usually what I'll do is I start with looking at the tasting notes online, either that the rep has given me or the website. But that's really just a little backstory. As I'm looking at the notes for the first, you know, for the Sauvignon Blanc that I tried, I didn't get all the nuances in the tasting notes that I read online, you know, or that maybe they didn't have that, you know, that year. But it's just a guide. So it's really just like, okay, I have a little back knowledge, but I really rely on the tasting of the wines.
Yeah, those flowery notes are usually written by flacks like me, so that they probably aren't that helpful.
Yeah, well, they're fine, but oftentimes there's so many descriptors in there. I'm like, I don't know where to go with this, you know. So the tasting and the notes I make are kind of almost narrowing it down so that my mind is not so cluttered. So I can just focus on, say, one or two main flavor components. And that will generally be what starts me creating the dish. So for instance, with the Sauvignon Blanc, immediately, you know, I got the citrus and grapefruit, and I got a little bit of that kind of melon and spice, if you will. So I wanted to do a crudo. My mind just instantly went to crudo. And, you know, I know crudo is typically a first course or something raw or oyster or whatnot, but I did a King Campachi crudo. And I like that because there's a real fattiness to it in a good way. You know, it's often called like white tuna, if you will. The texture is great, but it's meaty and it has enough fat so that, you know, to me, we're trying to find a balance, right? And so the acidity of the wine is cutting through that richness and the fattiness of that fish. So the dish is King Campachi crudo. I did a citrus pickled ripe melon, ginger grapefruit juice, and a little crisp of candied grapefruit. So the grapefruit, melon, ginger, citrus is basically the flavors that I'm trying to bring out. It's important to me, or I think it's important, the way that you marry those together isn't so direct, you know, where the ginger, for instance, ginger is extremely strong and overpowering, can be peppery, you know. So I make a juice, I actually use a juicer, and I use some of that juice with fresh grapefruit juice, Ruby fruit juice, and then just add that almost like I'm mixing it, you know, and I'm adding just enough where I can taste it's there, but it's not overpowering. So I want it to be in the background. I want it to complement the ginger notes in the wine, not overtake it. And then there always needs to be something crisp. And I think in terms of texture, so the Campachi is that nice creamy, buttery texture. And to have a little candied grapefruit gives a little crunch. And much like a wine, you have the palate, the buttery notes, and then you have that crispness of the acid. So I'm trying to mimic that through texture as well.
That's a lot more advanced than I probably would have went with, like goat cheese on a cracker as my match.
Yeah,
I like yours better.
Yeah, I might overthink things a little.
But that's why you're the professional.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I honestly, it's funny because I will write a menu and I'll go back and change it 5 times before I submit it. And I'm a visual person, so in my mind I see the dish, and it's as important as how I'm building it, because I, you know, I almost start with the visual. I want it to look like this, and then how do I achieve that and incorporate the components to it? So I know that the Campachi, I want it to look like these, let's say arrow shape, but you know, almost triangular pieces that are rounded, so that then I can put the pickled melon in there and accentuate visually the texture of that fish or the visual of that fish. So yeah, I'm a little in my brain. I'm starting to scare myself a little bit.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So at this point, I imagine a lot of this is happening in your head, but earlier in your career, would you have taken like tastes of different foods or things to get a feel for what might work with a wine, or like walking around the kitchen or picking things out of the refrigerator?
Yes and no, but I guess I can give some examples of when I actually have done that. You know, I did a dish for Nantucket Wine Fest a few years ago. To be honest, I forget the wine exactly, but I was able to get the wine and cook with it and taste it, and I had all the ingredients there. And I prepared it, and it really helped having both of those together, because I changed the way I prepared it for ease of preparation, but also to accentuate the wine. So I mean, I'm pretty good at knowing, you know, what flavors and textures are going to go with the wine, but to have it there was great. So this one was, I made a croquetta. It was basically a really big red wine, and I wanted something to be really beefy, but it needed, you know, I'm serving 800 portions, right? So I had to have it. How do I get one little bite that just encapsulates all of those nuances and the flavors? So it was braised beef cheeks, bone marrow, short rib, but it was, you know, the idea was this braised unctuous meat that then was breaded and deep fried into a croquette. And I think I had maybe like an onion jam underneath made with wine. But, you know, that dish in particular was, I just remember it because that wine, when I tasted it, I kind of changed, not the entire thing, but I changed a lot of how I ended up preparing that dish because of how the wine tasted.
And by the way, listener, we'll have all the wines and the pairings in the show notes. So let's move on to the next course, which was our St. Francis Chardonnay. What were you thinking about when you developed that, and what did you pair with it?
Yeah, so, I mean, I definitely love Chardonnay, and there's so many different styles, you know, oaky and buttery. And this one, I really enjoyed. It's kind of the style that I like, in that the citrus wasn't super citrusy. It was more kind of spiced apple pear and a great mouthfeel. I mean, it was crisp, but it's actually a great wine to pair with food because it had some acidity to it, you know, and some bright notes. So my mind kind of went to a really rich salmon that had some buttery components to it. So one of my, I don't want to say my specialties, but a dish I created years ago where I take salmon, I use Nordic blue salmon. It's just a beautiful salmon. I lightly cure it, salt and sugar, like literally just for 20 minutes. And what it does is just kind of tighten up the flesh, but it doesn't really cure it too much. And then I make a crust I caramelize onions really, really slowly in butter. I add some green apple and I cook that down till it's caramelized and then puree it into a paste. And then I smear it, and I'll add, for this, I didn't add dill, but oftentimes I'll add dill to that or tarragon or something. And then I smear that on top of the salmon, the whole side of salmon. And then I'll bake it on top of wood planks, like hickory planks. And what that does is wood is not a great conductor of heat. So it allows the salmon to cook very slowly. And so the texture is almost like when it's warm and cooked through, like, you know, kind of barely cooked through, almost like medium to medium well, it has like pudding-like texture. But, you know, I'm playing off that sweet and sour, right? So the green apple has nice acid. The onions obviously have sweet, the nice, rich, fatty salmon. To me, that's a perfect bite right there. And then I really want to accent the creaminess of that wine. And I did a creamed leek fondue. So, you know, I sweat leeks in butter very, very slowly. When they start to get tender, I add a little bit of heavy cream, just enough to kind of coat them, and then continue to cook those down until the liquid is evaporated and they're just like this buttery, unctuous mess. You know, something you could almost smear on toast. And then I made a simple lemon beurre blanc with that. So, you know, to me, the buttery texture and the fondue is as the creaminess that I'm trying to accentuate in the wine. But then I have that sweet and sour with the crust, and obviously the fattiness of the fish and the flavor is just a great, you know, salmon and chard is a great combo. So I really like that dish. There's not a lot of descriptors to it. It's really about the ingredients. It's basically like 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, there's 5 to 6 ingredients in that entire dish. And I don't think you need much more to complement that wine.
Yeah, and that's kind of like, simplicity is often key to a lot of great dishes, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, and also, sorry to interrupt, but, you know, going through a 5 or 6 course wine menu, every wine can't be so complex where your mind is just like, well, you know, I've been part of those dinners where by the 4th course, there's been so many ingredients and so many techniques and so many flavors that my palate's kind of shot, you know?
Yeah, you're sweating, you're dead.
So I do try to keep that in mind and build those flavors throughout the meal.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a good point. I think if it was only 3 wines for this meal, this virtual meal that we're putting together, you would probably look at it a little differently.
Absolutely, yeah. I would have much more strong flavors. Yeah, more complexity for sure.
I feel like I'm already learning a little bit more about cooking as well as the food pairing. You're giving a great description. And I had a big lunch, and yet somehow I'm starting to feel hungry again.
Funny how that works.
So let's move on to course three, St. Francis Merlot, which is one of my favorite wines for a lot of different reasons. And one of the reasons is the St. Francis Merlot, I enjoy it on its own, but I also find it really food friendly. So I'm curious to see how you found it.
I would say the exact same. It was my favorite wine of all that I tried. I felt like it was a challenge creating the dish because there was a lot of complexity in a good way. But I think the dish I ended up for, you know, is really good. I like being challenged in that way, but it's just a great drinking wine. And I agree, you know, I could have gone, I ended up going with a duck breast, but I could have gone with squab, which I really enjoy cooking with squab a lot, but I just didn't think there was enough fattiness, enough richness in that to complement the Merlot quite as much as a duck breast. But yeah, the dish I created was, I did a seared Jurgowitz duck breast and with a savory tart of duck confit and roasted prune plum. And then a Merlot gastrique, so obviously using the wine to make a gastrique, and then finish it with some dark chocolate. So, you know, where you reduce the wine down, but instead of finishing it with butter, which, you know, might be traditional for any, you know, French-style sauce, I use dark chocolate, which has 85% fat. I mean, it's incredibly rich and complex as well. So that kind of melts in. And that, I did get some chocolate and cocoa and black fruit right away in the Merlot. So I knew I wanted to incorporate those components into it. One thing that is important to me is that, you know, obviously wine is fruit, right? And I do cook a lot with fruit, but I didn't want each dish to be so fruit forward where it's like, oh, it tastes like plum, so you put plum with it, or cherry and you put cherries. So I try to use the technique to incorporate those flavors in a way that isn't just sweet fruit. And I think the techniques that I use are as important as the ingredients I use. So by roasting those prune plums, basically what I'm doing is I'm concentrating the flavors. You know, when I say roast, it's almost more of a oven dried, where I roast them very, very low, like a 250, so that they keep a great color when they're done. I'm dehydrating the liquid inside, so I'm intensifying the flavor of the plum itself, but it has a savoriness to it as opposed to pairing it with sugar, or even just making a gastrique where I'm taking sugar and sauteing them or something like that. Prune plums have a really unique flavor anyway, and I think they're more savory than they are just a sweet piece of fruit. And then paired that with the duck confit, which I think most people know how duck confit is made, but it has a saltiness and a fattiness. So this is like, you know, you have this salt, fat, and intense fruit flavor, black fruit, that has a real complexity to it that maybe other fruit doesn't, like blackberry. So yeah, I'm excited to eat that dish now.
Yeah, I think I want that for dinner tonight. I don't have any duck breast in my fridge, though. Have to make a run. Something just occurred to me that did you ever work with actual wine grapes? Like maybe when you were out in San Francisco?
You know, I didn't. No, I really didn't, actually. Although I will say that, and maybe I did. I think one year for one of the wine dinners at Stonehenge Inn, I got some grapes, and I think it was a champagne dinner. And I got a syringe and I injected grapes with champagne and
that's cool.
Froze them slightly. Yeah, that was amazing, actually. And then it was just like, you know, the waiters passed them around and it was just one perfect little grape that you just popped in your mouth and you got this surprise of this bubbly.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, you know, it sounds good right now, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We're getting close to 5 o'clock. We might have to do that.
Yeah, yeah, right.
All right, so next course is St. Francis Cabernet Sauvignon Reserve.
Yeah, what a big, beautiful wine. You know, I love cabs, obviously, with beef. But when I first tasted this wine, I thought, well, maybe something like buffalo or elk, something that is like really, really strong and beefy and kind of exotic. But the components and the you know, nuance I got in the wine kind of steered me in another direction where I wanted beef flavor, but I just wanted to be like beef on steroids, meaning so beefy. The whole dish is like a study in beef and intense flavor. Sounded kind of creepy, to, but you know, this wine is so big and there's so much going on. I mean, it was like, you know, this vanilla in there and I got kind of tobacco and cherry and, you know, some spice. So the dish I came up with was Snake River Farms Wagyu beef tenderloin, obviously very rich, amazing beef. And then I did a croquette that had braised oxtail and potato. Then I did caramelized cipollini onions, a sour cherry conserve, and then a bone marrow bordelaise. So obviously there's a lot of beef. You have the beef tenderloin, you have oxtail, You have marrow, you have veal stock, and then the components around it are just kind of complementing that. You know, the cipollini is a savory sweetness. The sour cherry conserve is, you know, I use some of the wine with the sour cherries and no additional sugar. So it really was just a sour cherry conserve, meaning cooked down into a nice chunky mixture. The oxtail, that's kind of where I put a little bit more of the technique and nuance in there, where I cut the oxtail into smaller sections, you know, seared them and did a standard braise. But in that braise, I put a little bit of a cinnamon stick and a couple of allspice berries. And so, you know, I don't know if you just took it out and after it was braised, I don't know if you'd really taste so much of that. But what I did next was you take that meat, you pick all the meat, you take all the liquid and reduce that down till it's like a gloss, and then fold that into the oxtail meat. So it's, and if you've ever cooked with oxtail, there's so much gelatin and it's like meat jello, if you will. So there's an intense richness to it. And so all those flavors that you braised in that liquid now become part of that oxtail. And then I fold it into riced potatoes and make a nice mixture. I chill that overnight and then I cut out these little squares and then bread them and deep fry them. And then you heat them up slowly. So the idea is you know, it just looks like a little square piece of fried mozzarella stick, if you will. But then when you cut into it, there's so much going on in there. And to me, that oxtail kind of elevates the rest of the dish.
Oh my God, it sounds amazing.
And that marrow bordelais, so, you know, is basically a red wine veal stock, right? And I think traditionally a true bordelais is actually finished with bone marrow. So, you know, you slice the little white marrow and it's basically fat. And just like I did with that chocolate, the duck dish, you finish that sauce by emulsifying with a spoon that marrow. So you have this like beef fat that's pooled on top of the sauce. So, you know, again, beef on beef on beef.
A true beef experience.
I was like, what else can I put on beef?
I'm really hoping that our listener is not vegan. I may have to put a something in the front of the episode.
I'll make a nice garden salad. That's fine.
All right. And what was the next course that we did? We did St. Francis Zinfandel Reserve.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was a great wine. I mean, often, you know, I've done wine dinners where there is no dessert. It's a cheese. And I could have done it, you know, a cheese course here, but I really wanted to do a dessert. And I just made that dessert, I wouldn't say on the savory side, just not real sweet, you know, sugar forward. So I paired that with I have a great recipe for a Swedish cake with cinnamon. And it basically is almost a flourless chocolate cake. It's a cross between a flourless chocolate cake and a brownie recipe. And to be honest, I don't remember exactly what makes it different. Maybe the ratios of fat. But I use really excellent cocoa powder, but I also add a little bit of melted 85% chocolate, which is really acidic and not very sweet, but has a ton of complexity. So the Swedish cake, I make it in small discs where they're only about 8-inch round. You know, it's hard to get the middle set on a larger size. So these would be a nice little pie wedge, but again, it's like maybe an inch and a half at the thick end, but it's incredibly rich. So you don't need a lot. I often think of wine as the dessert comes out and it's almost too much dessert for the amount of wine that you have, especially if it's a tasting. So I just wanted this really rich, incredibly complex slice of cake with the wine. And there's, you know, a lot of blackberry, ripe raspberry in the wine itself. So I did a berry smash. Basically, I took raspberries, blackberries, macerated with some of the wine and some sugar and just kind of let them macerate. So there was still somewhat of a fresh element on there. And then to finish it, I did a Zinfandel syrup where I took the Zinfandel. I added a touch of sugar, but I actually infused it with long pepper, which is like this Indonesian. It's like a peppercorn, but it's really exotic. Just to have that kind of exotic spice in there. And that helped kind of make it a little bit more savory. So it was basically a sweet and sour syrup. And then again, that just intensified or I think brought out the intense berry flavor in that wine.
That pepper that you added, did that add heat or just spice?
No, it's more of an exotic spice. It's not really even like peppercorn. I'll be honest, I always have a hard time. I know what it tastes like and where it's from, but I have a hard time explaining it. It's sometimes called an Indian long pepper. It's from a flowering vine in the pepper family, and it's cultivated for its fruit. But it has so much more complexity than a pepper. It's completely different. It's elongated like an inch long. But that's kind of one of my go-to things where many times people have tasted something with long pepper and like they can't put their finger on what it is, you know? And I kind of like that.
That's fun. That's what makes it interesting and fun. And you so could have just mailed it in and said, oh, I matched this with, you know, whatever cheese, but you went the full route. So thank you.
I could have done a molten chocolate cake and put it on the plate with a little raspberry Kool-Aid. I thought I'd step it up.
Yeah. Now I have to like crack out all of my St. Francis and build that exact meal for tonight.
Well, I will say about cheese, I love pairing wines with cheese. And if I was going to swap this out, I would definitely find something unique. I mean, there's so many amazing cheeses out there. And I do think the right one complements wine so well, you know, and I always try to incorporate some else. So I might make something like a brulee of, you know, whipped goat cheese, maybe not for this, but I've done it in the past where, you know, it looks like a creme brulee, but it's whipped goat cheese with some kind of filling in the middle. So I think there's ways to pair wine and cheese that isn't just, here's my slice of cheese on a plate with a cracker and some nuts. That's what's fun. And I'm not a pastry chef, so I kind of try to get a little creative there without having to make a gâteau of some sort or, you know, opera tort.
And again, we'll have all the wine pairings and the full menu in the show notes. So in all of your years of doing this, you know, pairing wines with food, are there any like really unique and unusual wine and food pairings that really strike you that you did where you were like, wow, this is like amazing or so strange and it worked or anything like that?
You know, I can't really think. I'm pretty traditional in terms of like the products I use and the pairings I make. You know, it's beef with red wine or it's elk. What I try to do in my style is to have a lot of complexity where there's these unexpected elements and people question, why does this complement it so good? And I think it's because of the technique and the extra steps that go into me creating that. So the answer is no, I don't really have something so memorable that worked because I'm pretty traditional in that I don't try to come up with something crazy that, hey, that worked. You know, to me, it's just not my style. It's not that interesting to me, you know?
And did any winemaker force you to pair their wine with something crazy like artichokes?
No, but that was something I learned. My GM told me, like, no artichokes, no asparagus, no raw onion. No, thank God. But I do think it's possible. I think that, you know, if you're a talented chef and you can find a way to pair, you know, something like artichokes is the worst, right? I mean, I did a dish years ago. It wasn't my dish, but I just remember this. And thinking back, I want to find a wine to pair with it. But it was a roasted pheasant breast where we lightly smoked it, but the breast was on the A-frame where we took the legs off and we wrapped bacon over the top and it was slow roasted over a mirepoix. And then we made a artichoke barrigoule, which has, you know, white wine and lemon and it's very acidic, you know, and it's a chunky thing. But we pureed that into a puree and it became a different flavor, you know, and it became rich and it didn't taste like, it didn't have that artichoke flavor that is so terrible with wine. So I think that could pair with something. And maybe that'll be my next project to try to figure out what that is.
I don't know. Maybe it's just better to stay away from certain ingredients if you can.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. But that's how my brain works. I'm already thinking, oh, geez, I can pair it. You know, it's like a challenge. No, I can make something good with that.
Speaking of specific ingredients, I was going through your bio and there's something about carrots in your background. And I just want to know, like, where do carrots come into play here?
Yeah, carrots is kind of made a big impact on me as a kid and has kind of become my, you know, our logo at Longwood was fashioned after peas and carrots, which bring me right back to my time growing up. I grew up in Maine and in Portland, but we had a camp up near Augusta near Damariscotta. And we fished and hunted and did all that stuff. But my great-grandmother and my grandmother lived there. We had three camps and they had these huge, amazing gardens. And so when I was really little, I would go to the garden of my grandmother and, you know, you have this black soil and she would pull the carrots out and they were so brilliant and orange, like as a little kid, it just blew me away. And so carrots, I just thought were the most beautiful vegetable and so cool. And so that was, I guess, where the love for carrots came from. But flash forward, you know, maybe 10 years later, I'm a kid, didn't want to go to school. I would tell my mother I was sick, although I wasn't, I just didn't want to go to school. And then I would, because I probably had ADD, I got really bored after about 3 hours. And I thought, well, I'm going to bake something. And I decided to bake a carrot cake. And I did this multiple times where, you know, I made it the first time, I didn't like it. So I kept trying. But I would make a carrot cake, and my mother would come home, and the kitchen would be trash. I'd have carrot peelings all over the place. And I started too late, so it didn't have time to cool. So I was trying to frost it. And, you know, I figured if she came home, maybe she wouldn't be mad that I basically skipped school to bake a cake if I had this finished cake ready. So she always tells that story. You know, that classic, you're at the family reunion or whatever. And she always tells her, I came home and there's carrots all over the place, you know. So it's a cute little story, but I was really intent, like, oh man, I want to make this carrot cake really great. And it never really quite came out that good. I don't even really like carrot cake. But yeah, carrots are important, you know.
So failed carrot cake to an amazing chef who can make amazing wine and food pairings. I'm just completely blown away by what you came up with these wines. So thank you so much. It's eye-opening and it's exciting.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I appreciate it. You know, it's always, especially now, you know, we're not doing these wine fests. It's sad. I miss them. I miss the camaraderie, the, you know, the food, the wine. So this was kind of a treat to do what I've been doing for the last 10 years during all these festivals. But, you know, I will put this menu in my back pocket. So, you know, maybe down the road we do a St. Francis wine dinner and I have half my menu already flushed out.
Yeah, maybe we do. I like that idea. Why not? Let's do it.
Sure.
Again, David, thank you so much. So for our listener, if they want to learn more about you and Longwood, where are the best places to find you?
Yeah, so at Longwood, you can go to longwoodvenuesanddestinations.com for our website and see our beautiful properties in Massachusetts, Rhode Island. My email, if you want to email me directly there, is david@longwoodvenues.com. And then personally, you know, I'm on Instagram at Chef David Blessing. On Facebook, also Chef David Blessing with a underscore after Chef and David. You know, I post a lot of food photos. I'm a chef that still loves cooking as a hobby. I do a lot of cooking demos and videos and just post beautiful food that I think is beautiful. So check me out. But yeah, it's been a blast. So thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much for listening to this conversation with David Blessing. I hope it gives you something more to think about when pairing wine and food. There's more about David in the show notes, and you can find more wine and food pairing advice at wine365.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell a friend and consider downloading the Wine 365 app from the App Store so you can get the next episode automatically, as well as bonus materials that will help you with your wine choices. I'll be back in about 2 weeks. Until then, remember, wine is food. It comes from a place. Enjoy it responsibly.